Good morning, everyone. Today is our last shiur of this man. Bezras Hashem, next week at this time, there will be a bechina. I will, b'li neder, email you my notes, I hope as soon as possible, and I'll tell you a little more about the bechina at the end of shiur today. So we're continuing in our discussion of the nature of Medrash and Agada. Turn, if you will, to page 78 in your source books. We're going to talk today about the relationship between Pshat and Drash. And as opposed to the last couple of shiurim where we were talking about Medrash and Agada in general, here we're going to discuss specifically how it relates to the interpretation of the Torah and our attitude towards Medrash. Of course, we know top of 78, the famous Medrash Bamidbar Rabba, Shivim Panim LaTorah. Torah could be understood on many ways. Kipatish Yifotzei Tzela, Ma Patish Zeh Mischalek Lekama Nitzotzos, Af Mikra Echad Yotzei Lekama Ta'amin. Psukim could be understood on multiple levels. We're meant to draw meaning from the various interpretations. Now, usually we view the various interpretations of the Torah as complementing each other. One question that sometimes people wonder about is what actually happened. When the Medrash depicts events as happening one way, and Lefi Pshuto Shel Mikra, they didn't quite seem to happen that way. So what actually occurred? Again, if there's not a contradiction, then there's not a contradiction. But what about places where at least the implication is that there's a contradiction? There are some thinkers that seem to understand that we should assume that the actual events correspond to the understanding of the psukim al pi pshat. I'll just give you a brief example from our parshios of three thinkers where we see this approach, and then we'll consider the implications of it. So one quick example, again on page 78, is where was Yocheved born? So Chazal say that Yocheved was born Bein HaChomos on the way to Yerushalayim. They derive this from the fact that it says that there were 70 people that went down to Mitzrayim. When you count them, there's only 69. And this is a reference to Yocheved. There are other answers to that question. Why doesn't it say 70 if there are only 69? The Rush even says that the Torah occasionally estimates and rounds. But Chazal's answer was that the number is precise. If you look at the Ibn Ezra says, well, this doesn't seem to make so much sense, because that would make Yocheved 130 years old when Moshe was born, and such an incredible nes should have been mentioned by the Torah. After all, look at what a big deal the Torah makes when Sarah gives birth at the age of 90. And therefore, the Ibn Ezra seems to reject the interpretation of the Medrash and gives another understanding of the Pasuk. Again, the Ibn Ezra seems to be saying that that what actually happened corresponds to the Pshat. A second example, the Ran in Drashos talks about who died during Makas Bechoros. I don't want to go through his whole Pshat. It's a brilliant, beautiful Pshat. It's on page 79. But essentially, what Ramban argues for is that it was the Peter Rechem, the firstborn of the mother, who died during Makas Bechoros. And he explains a number of psukim this way. This is why he suggests that there's a mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen for the Peter Rechem, because they were saved in Egypt. He suggests that the reason why they should be grateful for being saved, after all, why should they have been killed in the first place? Why do you have to, I don't have to thank you for not killing me. The answer is that the way Hashem carried out the Makkah was through some type of disease that affected the Peter Rechem. And Memela, there was a nes that they were saved. For this, they had Hakar Satov. And among other things, this is the basis for the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen. Now, the Ramban, the Ran then asks, one second, but the Psukim say otherwise. I'm sorry, Chazal say otherwise. Chazal tell us that it was both Bechor Min Ha'av and Bechor Min Ha'im that died, maybe even more than that, in Bayis Asher Ein Sham Meis. And he writes, where it's bolded on the bottom of 79, Afal Pisha Amru Bamedrish Ein Bayis Asher Ein Sham Meis, Ein Sham Bechor Gadol Ha'Bayis Karui Bechor, Zeu Al Tzad Hadrash. Aval Kifi Pshuto Shel Davar, essentially what Ron seems to be saying here is that what actually happened corresponds to the pshat. Again, I don't think he means to say that the Medrash is wrong, but the Medrash doesn't necessarily correspond to the physical reality of what happened at the time of Makas Bechorus. Finally, a third example, also relating to this week's parsha, where were the Yud Beis Shvatim buried? So the Abarbanel writes, it's on page 80, Vaykach Moshe Satzmos Imo Vayikberu Osam Beshchem Aval Shar Shvatim Nikberu B'Mitzrayim. That's why the Psukim always stress that Moshe took Yosef's Atzamos. No mention is made of the other Shvatim or their burial subsequently when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael. Vim hayosh chazal darshu al v'alisem es atzmosai mizeh in our parsha sha'af shar hashvatim ha'elu imahem hu derech drash upshara kasuv lo yisavalto. So again, what it sounds like he's saying, and there are many other examples we could bring, these are just three in our parshios, that the that what actually happened in the historical, physical, tangible sense were the events that are implied by the pshat.
That's not what they're saying
it's a good question.
I mean, that's what you're saying is not what they're saying.
I think if you read them carefully, that's what they're saying. I want to get through some point. I originally felt like what you were saying, that they're not saying, they're saying this is the pshat and that's the drash. It's not the, they're not taking a stand. They're just saying, you can't say that this is true al pi pshat that the shvatim were buried in Eretz Yisrael. No, it's not true because ein ha pshat savalto. But if you read them carefully, I believe, and I encourage you to read them carefully and tell me if you think I'm wrong. There are sources that learn the way you do, and we're going to see some other mahalchim in just a couple of moments. I think if you read these sources carefully, and you have them here in your source book, so take a look. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. Again, my netia originally was very much like what you were saying, because this does seem strange. But my feeling is, at least in these three sources, that's not what they're saying.
How does that work with halacha?
We're going to talk about it. Don't worry. We'll get to halacha. We'll get to when pshat contradicts halacha and what that means. We'll get there. These particular cases have no relevance to halacha. So Tosfos presumably isn't learning that way. But Tosfos in general, their mahalich is not this way. Tosfos generally thinks that we assume that the midrashim, as depicted, reflect the events that actually took place. But in terms of halacha, we'll go much further. But at least in these examples that we've seen, there is no halachic relevance.
Do you really think that even Ezra wouldn't be able to learn halacha like Tosfos there?
Maybe yes, or maybe no. Maybe we could still derive halacha from the events as depicted in Midrashim. Whether or not they actually correspond to the physical reality that happened in the world. In other words, I don't think that taking a stand here would limit our ability to learn halachos from the events that depicted in Midrashim. There's a general question whether you can, as we talked about earlier, should you be learning halacha from Medrash or not, but I don't think that this is inherently, this question doesn't, that question doesn't hinge on this, or it doesn't have to.
Oh, yeah.
I, agree that it's easier to say it one way, but I don't think it's mochrach. The Medrash clearly means something. The Medrash isn't hevel v'rik, nobody chas v'shalom. The Medrash is telling us something that's true and it's important and we should realize it. And I'd like to get there. But that's clear. None of these thinkers, nobody would chas v'shalom, I don't think. They don't mean to in any way disparage the Medrash or even its truth value. The only question is, does it depict the events as they actually happened or not? Now, again, we have to explain what that means, which I'd like to get to. So let's go on a little bit. So the first question we have to consider is what is the purpose of drash? L'mashal, the Rambam writes very famously, both in the Mor Nevuchim as well as in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek. It's in your source books on page 73, that there are three views of thought, 74, I'm sorry, that three schools of thought about how to interpret Midrashim and Agadita. Hakas HaRishona Vehem Rov Asher Nifgashti Imahem Vasher Raisi Chibureihem Vasher Shamati Aleihem Mevinim Osam Kepashtam Ve'enem Maskimim Masbirim Osam Klau. Most people simply understand Midrashim or Agaditas literally as though they literally happened. V'nasu Etzlam Kol HaNimnaos Michuyavei HaMetzius, and therefore things that are impossible become possible. V'lo asu kein elamach masichlusam b'chachmos v'richukam min amadayim v'ein bahen min ashlemos ad kedei shis oreru al kach me'atzman v'lo matzu me'orer she ye'oreram. In other words, they're not even bothered by the fact that these stories are impossible. V'lachein choshvin heim she'ein kavanas chachamim b'chol ma'amareihem ha'mechukamim ela ma'shevinu heim mehem. They understand them superficially, v'shem kepshutam, and this is the wrong approach. The second approach is by people that are educated and they're aware of science and philosophy and the like, and they understand that the stories as depicted literally could not have happened, and therefore they disparage the stories, they disregard the stories, they are dismissive of Chazal, says the Rambam. V'heim yoser sichlim min akasa rishona v'yoser pitim, they're even more foolish than the first group. V'heim kas ha'arura shehispartzu klape ha'anashim ramei olam shekvar noda chachmasam etzel ha'chachamim, etc., etc. So the first group understands it literally and has no problems. The second group understands that it can't be meant literally, but assume that they meant it to be stated literally, and therefore they're dismissive of Chazal. Both of them understand these Midrashim superficially, and therefore they're both wrong. Though the second group is much worse, because they have no respect for Chazal, as opposed to the first group that does. And the third group is the correct group, the smallest group, Hakas HaShlishi, Heim, V'Heim Chai Hashem Me'atim Me'od, Ad She'efshar L'Kru, you can barely even call them a group. And what do? On the one hand, they understand, like the second group, that some of these things can't be understood literally because of their awareness of science and the like. At the same time, they absolutely reject the second group's assertion that Chazal are foolish. On the contrary, they understand that all that Chazal say reflects deep wisdom, and therefore they seek a deeper understanding of what Chazal are trying to tell us. They reject the superficial and literal understanding and look to understand the message of what Chazal are saying. V'arei heim atzman mevarim psukei aksuvim umotzim osam mipshutam v'osim osam mashal v'hu emes that include sometimes deviating from the simple reading of the psukim, and this cut is the correct cut. And should they have an understanding of what Chazal are saying, good. And if not, so they don't reject the Medrash, nor do they say it should be understood simply and superficially. Rather, they acknowledge that there's something deep here, there's something wise here, but I simply don't understand what it is. Maybe one day I'll figure it out, or somebody will teach me. In the meantime, I can be confident that there's something wise here, even though I don't quite understand what Chazal are telling me over here. Yeah.
Why is Rambam's emphasis in that scientifically these stories can happen? Obviously, in the shot of the Torah, there are many things that scientifically can't happen.
So if it's a miracle, it's a miracle. Let's say we're talking. Let's give an extreme example. There are probably more subtle examples, but the Rabbah Bar Bar Chana stories or the like. So you're right, it's possible, but it's really totally impossible, right? And in Bava Basra, like there were gigantic whales that swallowed worlds and this and that, right? So if you go ahead and there's something deep here, if you understand what it is, then great. And that's why most of the Mefarshim read the stories in that way. And if not, so you're not going to understand it. You're not going to say this literally happened, but you'll understand that there's something wise here. Okay. Now, as opposed to, if you look at the earlier sources that we were citing, the Ran, Abarbanel, Ran, and Ibn Ezra, who were bothered more by textual issues, the Rambam here is bothered by more scientific issues. But one way or the other, the approach is what the Rambam's saying, which is that Chazal, whether or not we understand a particular passage or interpretation of a verse or a story that they depict as having happened literally or not literally, there's always omek. This is always what we're supposed to understand and take away from the psukim. It's what Hashem is trying to convey to us from the psukim. Let me give you a way that I think brings this out. The Maariv Chiyus, in his Mevo'ah LaTalmud, writes the following. It's on the bottom of page 80. I have it here in the translation. So he's talking about here how sometimes Chazal use exaggeration in order to invoke within us fear of heaven. We talked about at the beginning of the year how the purpose of Medrash and Agada is to teach us Yirat Shamayim. So he writes, the rabbis, as far as possible, praise the conduct of godly men to endeavor in every way possible to justify the doings of the good. It goes without saying that they used exaggeration in the praise of those good deeds of the righteous that are expressly recorded and employed exegetical methods to show that such persons observed the laws of righteousness to a higher degree than is required, and so endeavored to reveal by exegetical interpretation what the text left unrecorded. They follow a similar important principle when referring to the evil doings of the wicked. They charge them with all possible abominable deeds. And then the Ramban, sorry, the Maariv Chiyus, gives an example of this. The Gemara cited over here from Bava Basra. Amrav Yochanan Chamish Averus Avar Oso Rasha Be'yom Hahu. There were five averos that Esav did on the day in which he sold the Bechora to Yaakov. Baal Naira Murasa, the Hariges HaNefesh, the Kafir B'Tchias HaMesim, the Kafir B'Iker, the Shat Es HaBracha. And the Gemara then shows how he did each of these five things through drashos. So the Maariv Chiyus seems to be saying here that these are exaggerations that were done. We want to show the tzidkos of the tzaddik and the rishos of the rasha. Now, even if we accept this pshat, that these are exaggerations, that they're not meant to be taken literally, I'm not sure that we should, but even if we do, it's very important to understand the following, that this understanding of the Gemara in Bava Basra is teaching us the Omek HaDavar, of what Yaakov and Esav were fighting about. Chazal don't just use these exaggerated statements to just make the stories more exciting or more interesting or the like. It wasn't just one bad thing Esav did that day. There were five bad things, and they weren't just minor things, but they were the worst possible things in the world. Baal, Naira, Murasa. No, Chazal speak Be'ofen Meduyak, and it's not just Meduyak, but it's their goal is to teach you what the story of Yaakov and Esav is really about. Let's just give one minor nekuda of how you see this in the very example that he shows, and we could do this for the whole Gemara, but I want to speak more globally today. So the first aveira that the Gemara here says that Esav did on that day was Ba al Naira Murasa. So the obvious question that anyone reads this Gemara asks is there was no such thing as Erisin in those days, right? Remember the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Ishos? So what does it mean, Ba al Naira Murasa? Seems to have no meaning. If we're just trying to say, so you should say Baal Eishes Ish. What's Naira Murasa? Chazal are always Meduyak. I heard this explanation from my Rebbe, Yevarn Lapiansky, pointed out that if you read the Pesukim carefully, as the Ramban points out, the machlokes between Yaakov and Esav was versus the Esav's perspective was that everything is about the here and now, and Yaakov saw Nitzchias. That's why Chazal say they argued about Olam Hazeh versus Olam Haba. Esav's attitude is, Hine anochi holech lamus, v'lama zali b'char, I'm going to die. What does I'm going to die mean? The Ramban explains I'm going to die means that there's no Nitzchias and Neshama. That's why it says he was kofer Nitzchias HaMeisim, by the way. Hine anochi holech lamus means that there's nothing more to this world than our meager existence here, our physical existence, and therefore one may as well eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we shall die. So therefore, it's actually a good deal to sell your bechora for a good meal. Yaakov understood that our 70 or 80 years on this world is a speck in our existence that goes on forever, in the Nitzchias HaNeshama. Esav's attitude was here and now. The idea, the yesod of Erisin, is what? That you could have a situation that's future-oriented, which is a reflection of Yaakov's attitude. And Erisin is someone who's a Naira, Bevesa Viha, but she has a status of the Eishas Ish because of an event that's going to happen in 12 months from now. So right now, she's an Eishas Ish, even though she's owed a Bevesa Viha, because of something that's going to happen in the future. The notion of Erisin is a reflection of our future orientation. And therefore, it's a paradigm that reflects the machlokas between Yaakov and Esav. It's not just that Esav was Baal Eishes Ish. That simply is nus. Esav denied the notion of a future orientation. Everything was about the here and now. Hine anochi alech lamos. So Memela, Chazal say, in his first Averi, he's Baal Naira Murasa. And when you look at the Mefarshei Agada and the like, such as the Maral, so you see how they pick up on the details and they show how through understanding the Midrashim, we understand the true Kavana Satora of the stories. We get beyond the superficial understanding. The emes is that if you didn't have Chazal, so you could read the story of Yaakov and Esav and plausibly make the case that Esav was this innocent guy who was connived by this scoundrel Yaakov, who takes advantage of his hunger to steal his bechora and then tricks him a little later with the brachos. You could have a totally distorted understanding of the Torah. You could learn Parshas Metzora and not have any understanding that this has to do with Lashon Hara. So Chazal tell us how to understand the Pesukim. And without them, we're left with a very incomplete understanding of what the Ratzon HaTorah is in these Pesukim. And that's true regardless of what you say in terms of whether the actual historical events corresponded to physical reality as depicted in the Midrashim or not. Whether or not Bifoal, Lamaisa Esav was Baal HaMeurasa is irrelevant. If you don't understand that he was Baal HaMeurasa and what that means, then you won't understand the Psukim. Nor will you understand the Nikuda about which Yaakov and Esav were really arguing. And that's why even Pashtunim generally focus on the primacy of Drash. One famous example is the Rashbam and his programmatic statement. You have it over here in Parshas Vayeshev, in which the Rashbam, just read a couple of lines, Yaskilu v'yavinu, page 81, Oave sechel mashelim dunu rabosenu kien mikra yotim de pshuto. Af ki kara shel Torah basa lelamdenu ulhodianu birimizo sapshat hahagados v'hahalachos v'hadinim al yedei arichos halashon v'al yedei shloshim u'shtayim midos shel Rabbi Elazar beno shel Rabbi Yosi Aglili v'al yedei shalosh esrei midos shel Rabbi Yishmael v'arishonim mitol chasidusam nisasku lintos acharei hadrasho shehen ikar u'mitoch kach lohurgalu b'omek pshuto shel mikra. The Rashbam spends his whole commentary on the Torah telling you what the pshat is. Pshuto shel mikra. And at times, pshuto shel mikra, as understood by Rashbam, very much goes against the interpretations of Chazal. But the Rashbam tells you that you should know what's the ikar. The ikar is the drash. The ikar is the drash in the halachic realm, and the ikar is the drash in the narrative portions. He writes, that's the ikar. And that's why the Rishonim mitoch chasidusam did not focus on pshat. Now, again, that's not to say that pshat isn't important. If the Rashbam didn't think pshat wasn't important, if the Rashbam thought pshat wasn't important, then he would not have written a perish on pshat. And it's obvious that if the Torah expressed stories in a particular way, so that's because there's value in understanding that in that way. And it's not even true that pshat is just superficial. Like the Rashbam here writes, there's the Omek HaPshat. Pshat is profound, it's deep. It shouldn't be read superficially, but at the same time, it's still not the ikar, the Rashbam says. There's a famous passage in the Zohar, I guess it's in your source book, so I don't think we're going to have a chance to read it today, maybe another time, where the Zohar goes ahead and explains how the pshat of the psukim is compared to the outer garments of a person. And the way the Zohar sometimes understood the skin of a person is the drash of the psukim, and you go further in and you get to the sod and the like. The pshat is this: the clothing of a person. When I encounter a person, what do I see? I see his clothing. If I get to know the person a little better, so I get past that, and eventually I could hopefully get to understand their pnimius. And that's the Pnimius HaTorah. Now, ultimately, it's very important to recognize that the Torah didn't just say the Drash. It told us the Pshat. And Pshat without Drash is incomplete, and Drash without Pshat is incomplete. If you only focus on the Midrashim without going back and looking and carefully studying and analyzing the Psukim, you won't understand the Torah, and you probably won't even understand the Midrashim correctly in terms of what they're coming to convey. A lot of times, to appreciate the proper understanding of the Midrash, you have to also be thinking of what the Psukim say on a level of Pshat. Now, I'd like to, my goal today was actually to focus on the Ramban's Mahalich on this question. It's a little late, but I'd like to focus the rest of today's shiur on the Mahalich of the Ramban. Because I think when you see how he tackles this question, you get a very important... among the Perushim that Al HaTorah, who really deal with Pshat and Drash and Sod, so often on the same Pasuk, all of them. So among the first to do that is the Ramban. And I'd like to spend some time considering how he relates the two. So what would the Ramban say to the question that we said at the beginning? What actually physically happened? Was it the stories as depicted by the Pshat, or is it the stories as depicted by the Drash? So, for example, in the case of the Ibn Ezra's understanding of the birth of Yocheved, the Ramban defends the Medrash's understanding, though he answers the Ibn Ezra's questions. He doesn't state categorically that everything that the Medrash tells us literally transpired. Rather, he answers that the Torah's written text doesn't convey the entire story. Many details are left out. And if a particular part of the story doesn't appear, it doesn't mean it didn't occur. This, the Ramban tells us, is especially true with respect to Nisim Nistarim, which are often omitted from the text. You could see this Ramban here, bottom of page 81, going on to page 82 of your source sheets. Why the birth of Yocheved, Yocheved's giving birth at 130 was a Nes Nistar, the Ramban explains and relates to Ramban's general Mahalich about Hashkacha. Not for now, maybe next Siman we'll work on that. But there are many cases where the Ramban goes ahead and he gives two understandings of the events of a story that happened, the depiction al-pi pshat and the depiction al-pi drash. And this emerges from Ramban's extraordinarily careful reading of the text. And I should say, it's not just about small things, but it's about quite very big and important things. Let's give an example. When were the mitzvos given? So the Ramban writes that according to the Midrash, all mitzvos and their details were given at Sinai. But according to Pshat, many of the mitzvos were given at Ohel Moed, a short time later. And this question affects the interpretation of a number of psukim. For example, the opening pasuk in the book of Vayikra implies that the book of the mitzvos, the mitzvos given in the book of Vayikra were transmitted at Ohel Moed after Moshe had come down from Sinai. But according to the Drash, this is a repetition of the mitzvos that were given at Sinai. And he shows in many places how this question will affect the meaning of numerous psukim. Here's just one example on page 82. The pasuk in Parag Zayin of Vayikra, Zos HaTorah La'olah La'mincha V'la'achatas V'la'ashem La'miluim La'zevach HaShlamim Asher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe Bihar Sinai B'yom Tzavo Sois B'nei Yisrael La'kriv Es Karbneihem La'ashem B'midbar Sinai. So the Ramban is picking up on the difference between Har Sinai and Midbar Sinai. So he says, according to the Drash, all mitzvos were given at Sinai, right, at the beginning, Al Derech Rabosenu, Ki Kol HaMitzvos Namru L'Moshe Bar Sinai, Klal Osen, Pratosem, Dikdukem, V'nishnu Man Bo'omoed, Vine Mitzvos Vayikra Shinuyos. However, he writes that the simple reading of this pasuk is that some mitzvos were given at Har Sinai, and others were given at Midbar Sinai, i.e., Ohel Moed, right? Val derech hapshat shiaru asher tziva Hashem es Moshe behar Sinai uveyom tzavosos bnei Yisrael b'midbar Sinai lakriv es karbaneim l'Hashem ki tziva b'miluim behar Sinai v'chein ba'ol v'chatas v'tziva b'mincha v'asham v'zivchei shlomim b'midbar Sinai b'ohel Moed. So some karbanos like miluim and the ola and the chatas were given at Har Sinai, as we see from Sefer Shmos, and some, like the Mincha Asham, Shlamim, were given at Midbar Sinai at Ohel Moed, and that's what the pasuk is coming to convey. Now, there are many places, here among them, that Ramban seems to refer to a discrepancy in the events between Pshat and Drash, and he never seems bothered by the question of what actually happened. Unlike perhaps some of the earlier sources, he doesn't say this is what, you know, what actually physically occurred corresponds to the Pshat or the Drash. He doesn't feel any need to resolve this. He simply says, this is what happened Alpi Pshat, and this is Alpi Drash. In this example of when the mitzvahs were given, he keeps on referring to this Chakira. Look at his Hakdama, for example, to Sefer Dvarim, where he writes, the Kfar Namru Lo Kulan B'Sinai O Ba'olam Oed, right? When the mitzvahs were given either B'Sinai or Ba'olam Oed. He doesn't tell you which one. He just says, when were mitzvahs given? So he keeps referring, either Sinai or at Ohel Moed plus Sinai. Let's think of another example. We know that the Torah omits the early history of Avraham Avinu. The first we really know about him is when he was already 75 years old. Lach lecha mi'artecha mi'moladetcha. We also know the Midrashim depict how Avraham Avinu, long before God ever spoke to him, was the greatest person ever to live. He was Moser Nefesh Bor Kostim. He independently discovered God. And the Ramban, Kedarko, deals with the issue of why would it be that the Torah omits the early history of Avraham Avinu. And he notes the Midrashim about Or Kostim, and he says something interesting, that a similar event is recorded in a non-Jewish source. It's a book called The Nabataean Agriculture. Take a look at the Ramban over here. Va'inyan shekiblu rabosenu b'zehu emes, v'ani mevayro so. Avraham Avinu lo nolad be'aretz kazdim, v'inyan emekubal. Right, Ramban thinks he was born in Haran and later went to Or Kostim. V'inyan emekubal hazeh, nimtza gam kein b'sefer kadmonei agoyim, k'mo shekazdim ar nevuchim. This story of the events of Or Kostim is also recorded in a non-Jewish source. Ki hizkir b'sefer avodas ha'acharim ha'mitzriyim, ki Avram asher nolad b'kuta chalak aldas ha'amon shahayu ovdim ha'shemesh v'nasan ha'melech oso b'veis ha'sohar v'haya imam b'toch ha'chos yamim rabim sham achar kach pachad ha'melech shiyashchis alav arzo v'yasir b'nei ha'adam me'emunasam v'garash osam el k'tzei eretz kina'an shalakach achar shalakach kolhono. Says the Ramban, that the same story appears in this Nabataean agriculture. However, there's some differences in the story. For example, instead of there being a miracle of Avram being thrown into a kivshan and not dying, in this version, he got into a big machlokes with the king for preaching monotheism. The king threw him into jail and eventually was scared that Avram's claims were going to weaken his authority, and so he expelled him from the land. Says Ramban, whatever version you take, there was an ace. Whether you think what happened was the way Chazal tell it, that he was thrown into the Kivshan, or whether you say it happened as the event is depicted in this non-Jewish source. The difference is that according to Chazal, it was a nes nigla. According to this other source, it was a nes nister. Shenasan believe also amelach latzilo shelo yamisu lo yamisenu votzi oso mibesaf sohar shielach lenafsho. Why was it a nes nister? Because that's not usually what the kings did with prisoners in those days, especially ones that challenged their authority. They wouldn't expel them from the land. They would kill them. So there was a nes nister. Avraham Avinu was saved. The king decided not to kill him, but rather to simply throw him out of the country after taking all of his possessions. So either it's a nes nister or a nes meforsam. And again, here he presents both stories without being machriya, right? O nes meforsam, sheshlichu lekivshan ha'esh, v'nitzel k'divrei raboseinu. O nes nister, as is depicted in this source. He seems to treat both options equally. The truth is, later on in his Parashan Bereishis, he sows him a little bit against the Medrash, like the Nabataean source. But in other places, he cites both possibilities, like we saw before. The Ramban then explains why, if the story took place, it's omitted from the text. So he says, if you follow the version of the Nabataean agriculture, it was left out because, as we said before, like for Yocheved, the Torah leaves out details, especially Nisim Nistarim. And then he says, well, why would it be if it happened, like Chazal say, that it would have been left out of the text? And he gives answers to that. And then he says, well, if it happened like Chazal say, why is it not depicted that way in a Nabataean agriculture? And he says, well, that's also simple, because it would be obvious why they wouldn't want to record a miracle, because that would undermine their authority, and so on and so forth. In other words, he goes with these two mahalchim. He treats them, again, seemingly equally. And he says, what would, if it happened this way, you'll have to say this way, that way, and this way, and that way. And he goes through the whole possibility. But he isn't machriya. Let's give one more example, and then we'll try to flesh out a mahalich. The pasuk famously says, "Lo sochlu al hadam." What does that mean? It's a very obscure pasuk. So Ramban, true to form, addresses this both on a level of pshat and on a level of drash. According to pshat, the mitzvah means to prohibit kishuf and ksamim. According to drash, it means a number of things, including that you can't eat from an animal after it's slaughtered while it's still alive. And the Ramban says that how you interpret the pasuk will relate to how to interpret a story that actually took place. The story is in Sefer Shmuel. Take a look on page 83. The pasuk says, Vayagidu l'Shaul l'Emor, hine ha'am chot'im l'Hashem l'chol al adam. So what does it mean? What exactly did they do? So if you understand the drash understanding of the pasuk, the Ramban says that it means that the nation sinned by eating the animal after it was shechted, before it died. And if you understand the pshat of understanding of lo sochlu al adam, so it means they engaged in some type of necromancy. And Ramban then goes ahead and shows how you could have textual support from the book of Shmuel for both renditions. What actually happened according to the Ramban? Which one did they do? Necromancy? Or eating before the animal died? Not clear. Maybe both. Doesn't seem to be very important. The Ramban also shows, as he often does, how the pshat and the drash relate to each other, amplify each other. In this case, both sins, whether they did the sin as understood by pshat or drash, reflect the nation's insecurity, their inability to wait, whether it's therefore they engaged in necromancy to know the future, or they couldn't wait for the animal to die, they started eating from it before it was mutter fully. But again, the impression you get is that what actually transpired is less important to know. What we have to know is what the psukim are teaching us, both al pshat and al pidrash. In all three cases that we've seen in Ramban, he presents both versions of the narrative without being machriya. Now the question is, well, why? Isn't it important to know what actually happened? So the Ramban seems to be telling us that there's a value in understanding the narrative from both perspectives, from the perspective of pshat and the perspective of drash. And what we learn Torah not so much because it's a history book and we want to know what happened. Again, that's not to say that the stories didn't happen. Of course they did. But we learn Torah to understand the Ratzon Hashem. And we want to get from the Torah what Hashem wishes to communicate to us. And he communicates his message on multiple levels, both pshat and drash. And therefore our avoda in Talmud Torah is to understand the Torah as fully as we possibly can, which includes understanding it both al-pi pshat and al-pi drash. And if that leads to contradictory versions of the story, so if we have a resolution, by all means. But if we don't, it's not a question that has to trouble us. We are supposed to understand the Torah. And the Torah is teaching us this. That's our goal, to understand the Ratzon Hashem. And we understand the Ratzon Hashem through the Torah, through the text that we've been given. The text of the Torah and the Mesorah we have from Chazal. So if we can figure out what happened, of course we should. It's not really correct to say that the Ramban was uninterested in what happened. And I think it's certainly untrue to say that Ramban thought that it doesn't matter in the sense that these events don't in some way correspond to true events. Again, another example from this week's Parsha. Ramban in Parshas Vayechi, Mem Ches Zayin, writes that Yaakov buried Rachel on the road because he knew prophetically that the Jewish people would be exiled and they would pass Rachel's tomb in the Ramah of Binyamin and they would hear her weeping and would be comforted. And the Ramban wrote that while he was still living in Spain, the one in this week's Parsha, Vayechi. As we know, he moved to Eretz Yisrael in 1287 and he visited Kever Rachel. And he concluded that that interpretation is wrong because of what he actually saw with respect to the geographical placement of Kever Rachel. And therefore, in Parshas Vayishlach, Perek Lamed Hei, on page 83, bottom line, really 84 on the top of your source sheets, he gives another interpretation. Zeka Sabti Tchila, V'achshav Shizachisi Uvasi Ani L'Yushalayim, Shevach L'Kel HaTov V'Ameitiv, Ra'isi Be'inai, She'en Min Kvuras Rachel L'Beis Lechem Afilu Mil, V'inei Hukchosha Perish Hazeh. The interpretation that I thought, based off, you know, when I was living in Spain, is refuted, based off of the reality I see on the ground now that I've visited Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, he gives another interpretation of the Pasuk. So, again, we're not saying that the Ramban didn't care about what happened, and to the extent that we have accurate information about an event that may affect the interpretation of the verse, of course, we would consider that. However, if there's a discrepancy between the event as depicted by Pshat versus Drash, and we don't really have a way to be machria, so that's not important, because like I said, our goal is to understand the Ratzon HaTorah. What is the Torah telling us here? What are we meant to learn? And we could always do that by looking at the Pesukim and Chazal. Now I'd like to present a possible understanding of Ramban, which I think is actually wrong. So one approach you might take is to say that the fact that the Ramban does not offer some type of resolution, he says this is what happened al-pi pshat and this is what happened al-pi drash, reflects a lack of interest about what actually happened. And even more, because we don't really care about how the events unfolded. So that's why the Ramban doesn't go ahead and try to be machri. He says, oh, well, this is what happened al-pi pshat, this is what happened al-pi drash. There's a famous statement of the Rambam. The Medrash, the Gemara in Perek HaChelek says that according to Rabbi Akiva, someone who reads Svarim Chitzoniyim has no chelik in Olam Haba. So the Gemara suggests that that would even include works like Ben Sira. Why? So the Rambam says in his Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, bottom of page 84, V'Svarim HaChitzonim, Amru Sheheim Sifrei Haminim, V'chein Sefer Ben Sira, V'hu Hayish Shechiber Svarim Yesh Bahem Hatulim Me Inyanei Hakaras Panim, Ein Bem Tam V'lo To'eles El Ibud Hazman Behavel. So what's wrong with Ben Sira? It's a waste of time. It's not heresy, but it's just a waste of time. Now that wasting your time warrants Ein Lo Chelek Lo Haba is something to talk about during another Musar Shmuz, but maybe it's a good thing to think about now that you're about to have vacation in a couple of weeks. So it's a good Perush Mishnayos to think about. So that's what's wrong with Ben Sira. Kigon. And then he gives other examples of Sfarim that are a waste of time. Eila Sfarim hanimtzaim eitzel ha'arav me sipur divrei yamim, history books, chronology books, v'hanagas ha'malachim, v'yichusei ha'arevim, v'sifrei hanigun, u'kiyotzei bahen min ha'sfarim she'en bahen chachma, v'lo to'eles gufani, Ela Ibud Hazman Belvad. About them, these are the Svarim Chitzonim that someone who reads them, according to Rabbi Akiva, ain lo chelek l'olam haba. Now, why is history such a waste of time? The Gemara in Yoma says, maybe Bein HaSemestrim, I'm supposed to give a shir. So they didn't know whether it should be on Hashkafa or the second parak of Sanhedrin. So we will do both. There's a sugya in the second parak of Sanhedrin of Maida Have Have. We could do both. So Maida Have Have. The Gemara says, here's one example of Maida Have Have in your source sheets on page 85. Ketzer El Bishan, Maida Have Have. The Gemara wonders how Aaron and the Banim were dressed during the inauguration of the Mishkan, and the Gemara says, "My Dave Have, who cares? We're interested in understanding the Torah and gleaning its messages and the events that actually occurred. So, My Dave Have, that's the horror what the Rambam is saying when he rejects history. Now, just to say, it's pashut that, let's say it like this. There's some thinkers, there's a book called Zachor who has this theory, where he says, well, this is the why you find so little interest in organized, systematic history in Chazal. Chazal have lots of stories about what happened over various periods of time during the Tkufa of Chazal, but there's very little history. That's why you have to look at books like Josephus and the like to figure out a lot of the events as they took place. There's history, and even the stories. You can't really figure out from a lot of the stories when they took place. Sometimes there are different versions of the story. In one place they took place during the Hellenistic period, and in one place they took during the Roman period sometimes. So why is it that that we have so little history in Chazal? So he suggests, Yerushalmi, that perhaps that's because the approach of Chazal was Maida Have Have, doesn't really matter. What happened, happened. What difference does it make what happened in the past? So I think there might be some truth to what he's saying, but he really does take it too far. The Gemara, when it says Maida Have Have, doesn't mean to say that it doesn't matter what happened about all things. There are certain details of the past about which we might say, who cares? Maida Have Have. The question of Ketzer El Bishan is not an important thing to know. So I'll say Maida Have Have, whatever happened, happened. Just because we say about one event, Maida Have Have, doesn't mean that there's no value in studying history. And likewise, The Rambam would agree that there are times when knowing history is very important. And the Rambam, on occasion, expresses it. We just finished Hanukkah. The Rambam's Hakdama to Hilchos Hanukkah is an example. The Rambam learns many understandings of mitzvos and Chelek Gimel of Mor Nevuchim based off of the historical realities that took place at the time. The Ramban, if we try to use this to explain the Ramban frequently tells us the importance of knowing history, knowing the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim, strengthens our emunah, knowing, the Ramban writes, he quotes, the Ramban in Bamidbar Lamed Gimel Aleph, quotes Rambam's theory for Mor Nevuchim, that the reason why the Torah lists all the encampments of the Jewish people was so that we understand that these events actually took place, and the miraculous protection that was afforded to the Jews during their sojourns in the desert. So by giving specific locations, the reader recognizes that they actually dwelled in these most inhospitable environments. In Parshas Hazinu, he further tells us about the importance of studying history and learning from the past and applying that to the present. So I don't think that that this idea of Maidavi Havi really is the issue for the Ramban. Again, the Ramban expresses this idea, well, this is what happened Alpi Pshat, and this is what happened Alpi Drash, for some of the most fundamental events in our history, like Matan Torah. Rather, I think the Yesod is that the Ramban is not telling us that what happened is unimportant, but rather, he's telling us that understanding the texts, understanding the Dvar Hashem, is inherently valuable. And therefore, if there is a discrepancy between Pshat and Drash, our goal is not to try to reconcile it and figure out what actually happened, but rather to understand what the Torah's underlying message is. And this is perhaps, I'll leave you as one final thought that relates to what we've been doing this whole Zman, which is that if you look, Baruch Hashem, we've been zocha to learn sugyos and machshava together, and Bezus Hashem will continue after the break. If you look at the way philosophy or machshavat Yisrael is studied in the academic milieu, so it's very different than I think that the way that we've been trying to approach it. Not just in terms of style, but style as a reflection of the goal. Our goal, from an academic perspective, the goal is, you know, what was Rambam's view about so-and-so, and what was Ramban's view of so-and-so, and what might have influenced Rambam and caused him to arrive at his view, and the like. And therefore the history is very important, and the environment is very important, and the like. No, I'm not saying that those factors are irrelevant. Sometimes history and environment and the like might shed light on a correct understanding of a Rambam. But fundamentally, our approach is very different. Because when we're learning the Rambam, we're trying to figure out the emes. Not even what Rambam said, but the emes. What Rambam said helps us come to the emes. But that's our goal. It's a very different goal. It's not just to figure out what happened. Same thing when we're studying Gemara, and that's why the interests in, let's say, academic Talmud are very different than the interests in the Gemara, the Beis Medrash. Not to say that understanding the history and the background and the influences of the ancient Persians and the different layers of the texts, all those might have some value and they might be interesting, but that's not the goal. The goal isn't to study the history. The goal is to understand the emes, to understand Ratzon Hashem, to understand how we're supposed to live our lives. And that's our goal in studying Machshava together as well. And therefore, the historical issues are at best secondary, because that's not the purpose. And likewise, when we read these Rambans, our goal is to understand the Torah, understand the Ratzon Hashem as expressed within the Torah. Hashem conveys his message on many layers and in many levels, through Pshat, Drash, Sod, and it's when we see it in its totality, to the extent that we succeed in seeing it, we can never fully see it, but to the extent that we're Zocha to understand, so we'll have a better understanding of what we're supposed to get from it. And to start asking the question, well, what actually happened? Did it happen this way or that way? Is missing the point. Because it reflects the fact that you're not focusing on what we're supposed to focus on, what we're supposed to get out of it. Again, sometimes, it's not to say it's irrelevant, it's not to say that it's unimportant, it's not to say that if you have information that could change it, you will, like we saw in the Ramban. But that's not our goal. Okay. So we'll stop here. I know there are a lot of questions. Just in terms of the Bechina, as I said, I hope, certainly by Motzei Shabbos, to email you my notes. In the meantime, hopefully you have some notes. You can go through the Makoros that we've done. The test is open book, open notes, open Sfarim. You could do whatever you want. No expectation to memorize all this stuff. It's hopefully to have familiarity. So one day you'll be able to look back at these sugyos and you'll have remembered them to some degree. You can't, as I said, use my notes. It's not a hard bechina. The way to prepare for it is to chazer. I know that most of you probably have finals this coming week. So if you find that you need to focus on your finals and don't have time for chazara, so that's no problem. Just take it and the makeup date. I would prefer if you could either take it tomorrow on Friday or on the makeup date, whichever you prefer. I think it's definitely better to take it on a later date and chazer more over Bein Hazmanim as opposed to taking it on the earlier date and not having had a chance to chazer. So you could prefer, you don't have to tell me. If you show up on Friday, you'll take it Friday. And if not, I'll assume you'll take it the makeup date. If for whatever reason you can't do either of those, so let me know and we'll figure something out. Hatzlacha Rabbah, and have a good Shabbos.